What is up, business owners, entrepreneurs, and probably my grandma? You are listening to Business Vibe. Today's interview is with serial entrepreneur Mark Whitman, owner of Skyhook Adventures, a platform that connects travelers with local guides from around the world. Skyhook does $5 million in annual revenue for Mark. And in this episode, he tells you everything he did to build it, where he finds his remote staffing, how he validated the idea, and what he does in his day-to-day. If you guys enjoy this interview, please hit that subscribe button. There are so many more business interviews coming up with successful entrepreneurs. You don't want to miss any of them. Enjoy.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
So my background, how far back do you want to go?
However much time you got, however much detail you want to give, we'll take it.
I will start
all the way back.
I won't go all the way back. I've been doing the online entrepreneurship thing for just over 10 years, 12 years now. Tried various different business models over the years, started with affiliate marketing, content marketing, SEO type stuff. And that's pretty much maintained its thread throughout all the businesses that I've done. But yeah, I've dabbled in Amazon FBA, we've done SaaS, we've done DTC e-commerce, marketplaces, various things. More recent times, we ran an agency, content marketing SEO agency, which we recently sold in 2023. And today, my focus is primarily on a marketplace that specializes in adventure travel, where we connect travelers with local guides around the world, and we take a commission on the platform for any bookings that are made through our platform. And that's called Skyhook. But all of these other projects, some of them I sold, some of them didn't work and failed. Some of them are still kind of bumbling along. I've kept some of those projects, and those sit inside alongside our primary business, Skyhook, in a holding company. So we're not a traditional holding company in the sense that we're going out acquiring operational businesses and then putting management teams in place. Not at all. Like, I'm super small. Most of the projects that I do are my own. Skyhook was an acquisition, and we're not averse to doing acquisition, but it's like my own money, right? So finding deals that suit me, that I've got bandwidth for, that are within my budget, is fairly limited. When we originally spoke, I said, yeah, I've got a holding company with various projects, but I wouldn't say like I'm a traditional holdco business owner.
So you said primarily the businesses that you own are, you've grown all of them, most of them.
Most of them. Skyhook is an example of one that we've acquired. We were looking to make another acquisition this year, but it turns out that one, I couldn't find the right target. Ones that met my criteria, because I was looking for a very specific strategic acquisition that would be a bolt-on for Skyhook, which would be in the adventure travel insurance space. So we're obviously selling a lot of travel related services, and then or tours, and what people often need is insurance as well. And because our product is quite specialist, general insurance usually doesn't cover some of these activities. And so we were looking to acquire in that space, and we just couldn't find the right sort of target or meet at a price point that would be sensible. So the multiples were quite high for any of the meaningful conversations we had. And so I've just decided to build in that space. So that's probably the last time I'd build now. I'm tired of building from the ground up, and it's very difficult and hard to get a brand off the ground and actually get traction, and takes a long time. It's a lot faster to buy.
And that was going to be my next question too, is how do you decide some of these companies and industries? And while I was looking at some of the companies that you own, it did seem like that you had a common theme, which I'm sure helps, because you kind of take your ideas and experience from one, and you can take it to the next one.
Yeah, so I've dabbled, as I said, in lots of different things, but I've tried to keep the industry or the broad theme quite similar throughout. And although we have gone into some strange things, most of those I've got rid of or sold. So the main theme is travel and the hospitality industry or lifestyle brands.
What role in the businesses do you play?
I'm pretty hands-on and quite operational, and I enjoy that. But I'm quite fortunate to have a great team that we've built over the years. And I seek out people who are great managers, who've got like an entrepreneurial flair and just like a very safe pair of hands, like good operators, essentially. Once I find those people, I nurture them into positions where they can actually take on a full project or manage, by project, I mean a business. But I'm still very much heavily involved in the day-to-day of every business that's in the portfolio.
How do you find good people to run these companies?
So just before we jumped on the call, or officially jumped on the call, I was from South Africa originally. And so I do all my recruitment out of South Africa. The great thing about South Africa is you get in a very high quality, highly skilled individual on average who's English speaking at a cost that's often a third of what it would cost out of the States or the UK. So it's a very affordable market to recruit from. And so we've done that for years just because I'm so familiar with the market. And our agency that we built was entirely staffed out of South Africa. It was about 100 people, about 15 full-time and about 100 freelancers when we reached full scale with it. And so going through that process of quite significant recruitment, I've learned like how to find golden nuggets and then nurture them through time. A lot of it's been luck, right? But I've got quite good at like recognizing talent, and it's like a specific type of talent that I'm looking for this type of individual. It's someone who's like entrepreneurial, but not quite confident enough to go it alone and want to almost be mentored into like a leadership role, a significant management role within a company where they're basically running the show. But that's, it doesn't like happen overnight. So all of the people who are in those types of positions with me have been with me for years, and it's been like a nurturing process. So I've never like recruited for that role. I don't even know where you would start, because you'd need to align incentives in a very interesting way if you're going to go out and recruit for that type of person versus nurturing someone over years into that type of position.
How do you make sure that this business over here, business A, isn't falling behind while business B is doing good? And how do you kind of keep an even flow across all the different, all your different companies?
Well, the one that's like most actively managed is the biggest business, and the one that's the most complex, which is Skyhook. And so that has very close active management on my behalf. So I'm very close to the business. So I know whether that is going off piste or not. The others are a lot smaller, right? We're talking tiny businesses, they're micro businesses in some cases. One of them doesn't have any people. It's like a little passive income generating SaaS tool, right? Which I go back and forth with whether I should sell this thing or just keep it. But yeah, it doesn't require much oversight. Very limited. Like we're talking a few hours a month. Other projects, I've just got good people in them who have strong ownership over the project. We meet weekly or sometimes even just monthly, run through the numbers. But again, they're small businesses. They're not as big and complex as Skyhook. I suspect if they got to a bigger scale, they would require a lot more bandwidth from me. It's fairly simple, like what I'm doing. I think, you know, people who have more traditional holdco with bigger companies, you need a lot more management oversight and, you know, access to, because a lot of those companies or the people who are running the holdco aren't that close to the portfolio company. So you have to have a great management team in place who's reporting to you. Whereas I'm like actually, I'm close enough to every project to know what's going on a day-to-day basis, pretty much.
Do you mind talking about the revenue that you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can talk about Skyhook revenue. Marketplaces revenue really splits into two different types. You've got the marketplace revenue, so like what's coming through the marketplace, and then our revenue as a position, the percentage of the commission percentage, essentially. I can talk about GMV, which is the gross marketplace revenue. So we're on about 5 million pounds. I don't know what that is in dollars, maybe $7.5 million that's coming through the platform. Our plan is to try to grow that quite aggressively. And yeah, I think there's a lot of headroom. It's definitely a growing industry. More and more people are looking to do adventure-related activities. And we haven't even tapped the US market yet. Like most of our customer base is UK/Europe. So this year was the first year that we're starting to look across the pond and target America, which is obviously just so much bigger, just much, much bigger opportunity in America. Our sweet spot in this business is we're trying to target people of our sort of generation who've got disposable income, but don't necessarily want to do a long holiday. They're time short. So we do a lot of kind of like 4 to 5 day trips where you don't have to get a lot of leave. You can maybe take a Friday off or a Monday off and do it over the weekend. Those types of trips tend to do very well. So for example, in Europe, we do a kayaking and hiking trip in Norway, which is very, very popular with Brits because it's only 4 days. It's easy to get to Norway. We do another one in Switzerland, Tour de Mont Blanc highlights hike. And so we're trying to do the same in the States, but I'm not very familiar with America and like adventure travel. So we're still trying to work out the product and find the right guides and so on.
So kind of moving on to like the growth and expansion, maybe we can focus on Skyhook. What's worked for you as far as like getting customers and retaining customers?
At Skyhook, So traditionally, the business has been a single channel marketing business, which has been Meta, so advertising Facebook and Instagram, and still very much relies on that channel for business. But since we took over, which was about just over a year ago, we've broadened our marketing strategy to become probably, I would say, like a three-legged stool so far at this point. So we've started advertising pay-per-click for Google as well, but I'd still bundle that into pay-per-click advertising. We've invested heavily in SEO because I've got a strong SEO background. And if you go look at the SEO metrics of this business, it's just exploded since we've taken over. So we're getting a lot of organic traffic now. We've heavily invested in social, like organic social as a channel. I'm not convinced that it's actually converting though, but we do get a lot of eyeballs there. And then we've doubled down on email marketing. About 5,000 people travel with us every year. And so, you know, we've got a relatively large database of customers and then a lot of people who subscribe to our content and so on. So we do a lot of email marketing related activity. And that actually generates quite a lot of business.
Like when you built this, are you seeing, does customer feedback play at all into how you've been building and creating your adventures?
In terms of the product development or?
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't actually relied heavily on customer feedback for product development, but it is something that we have started thinking is a great way to generate demand. We are, for example, we've just entered Iceland as a new destination with some trips in Iceland. What I said to the team is when we do this next destination, for example, let's say America, let's reach out to our customers and like actually find out what they want, generate demand for a product by asking them, and then go build the product and say, ta-da, here it is. You said you want this. Now we've got it. But yeah, historically, that hasn't been done. And we still haven't actually executed on that strategy. It's been more inbound. Like there are so many local guides around the world who just message us, who want to be on our platform. And then we just assess whether they're a good fit.
People would actually prefer that almost because it's like a total new thing that they don't have anything, they have no idea about. And so it's all new. It's like a brand new, beautiful adventure to them.
I mean, there's a couple of like competitors in the space, fairly large ones, who we obviously can see if a trip is doing well on their platforms. And then it's an obvious route just to kind of see what's working there and do something very similar because there's demand there already, like the demand's proven. So yeah, there's a lot of copycat behavior in the industry. Yeah, there's a bit of a risk because the nature of this business is it's a volume-based business, right? Because we're not doing private trips. We're doing group travel. And therefore, you get the economies of scale to drive the price down for the customer. But if you can't get enough people onto the group, it's actually loss-making for the guide. And so you need to generate sufficient demand for the group to become economically viable for the guide to actually make money on this trip. If he's running at an open group price and he only gets two people on it, that's problematic. And so you definitely want to try to run with what you're pretty confident is going to win. Versus just trying something new for fun.
So like, as far as your holding company goes, are you looking to build, are there any new sectors or industries that you're kind of looking to grow into and expand? I know you talked already about like the travel insurance type thing.
So there's two projects we're working on. Both of them are build projects. But as I said, like once these are done, whether they're successful or not, one's like super new, one's like slightly more established. So I mentioned travel insurance. That's just a natural bolt-on because you've got 5,000 people buying trips from us, they need travel insurance, we're just going to bolt it on. That product is going to be called Rise and Shield. It's not live yet. We're looking to launch that in October. We're building it currently. You've got to build like a whole quote engine and so on. The project that is live, which we alluded to earlier, which is I'm very experienced with recruiting out of South Africa. The South African proposition to me is just amazing for like small businesses or even like established businesses. Like I don't understand why you would limit your talent pool to your local suburb or your local city when you could look at the globe and like get amazing people from offshore at like a third of the cost. And so we've launched product for that, which helps Brits and American companies find talent in South Africa. And that's called Source.
Yes.
So that's a Source Remote. The proposition there is we can do the recruitment element. And then I don't know if you've heard of this, it's called EOR, which is Employer of Record. So technically, when you're recruiting someone outside of your country and you're doing so on a full-time basis, you are probably breaking like the tax and labor laws of the local country that you're recruiting from because that person is actually working full-time for you but not paying employment tax in the country of origin. They might pay their income tax, but they're not paying the employer's tax. And so the way to get around that without having to set up an entity, let's say you're an American company, but you're recruiting from the Philippines or from South Africa, the way you get around that is you set up a local entity, or you engage someone like ourselves who's got a local entity, and we become the employer of record for that person. And so everything's tax compliant then.
So there's a lot to it that most people probably wouldn't think of.
Yeah, I mean, most people, including myself, have historically recruited, say, from South Africa. Our company is not based in South Africa, and we've done so using independent contractor agreements. But ultimately, those people are actually working full-time. And this is how most people recruit nowadays. It's not, governments are cashing up on this, right? And so the way to do it properly, without having to go set up an entity in your local market where you're recruiting from, is to use a EOR service. So you might have heard of the company Deel. So Deel provides a solution for that as well globally, but they're very expensive versus using like a local entity like myself. We've got an entity in South Africa. We can do the whole thing for you and recruit that person legally, pay them through our payroll. We're the employer of record, but you're the actual end customer. That's your staff member, essentially.
Everybody wants their pound of flesh, all the governments, right?
Yeah, especially the American government.
Yes, they do. I can vouch for that one. Moving toward personal insights about like entrepreneurship and that. What do you really enjoy about being an entrepreneur and being your own business owner?
I enjoy the autonomy. I enjoy being my own boss. And that's probably the main reason why I'm taking this career path. I enjoy being very closely aligned and incentivized to the financial rewards of doing my own thing. And I enjoy and still enjoy the birthing process of a business, the early stage of a business. I would say my strength is from like idea to say $1 million in revenue. I'm like really strong in that. Like that's a unique skill set. And I've done it a few times now. And I love that process. I get bored once the business is at a scale and that it's become more like operational and procedural and there's a system in place. Then I'm like, oh, I'm on to the next thing. I think that our people are incredibly strong in that next stage. I'm actually quite weak on that next stage because I literally get bored, I think. But yeah, I think that's why I went down that path. And I used to be like a huge evangelist for people doing the entrepreneur route for their career. But actually, it's got some big downsides as well, I think. It's very hard and challenging with a high degree of failure. And it's not necessarily the greatest path for most people. Yeah. And it's very all consuming. I think it suits a character who's quite obsessive and like is thinking about their business all the time. And if you're not like that, it's not going to be enjoyable. So I don't think it's actually a route for everyone. I used to think this is the route that everyone should do. And like, don't go to university. Like, that's a waste of time. Just do this. And now I'm much more like, actually, depending on your character traits, this route might work well for you.
So you mentioned you have a skill set and got good at gaining that first kind of million. What skill sets are good for that do you have?
I think it's like some general like business skill sets that are important, like proposition development, product market fit, and like understanding that quickly and aligning the product or the proposition to a market. An ability to be very driven and ambitious to keep pushing because it's very hard. Like to get that first like dollar is difficult. Yeah, I mean, I think the early skills from setup to like a million is pretty much all around determination and grit and just like, and moving quickly and a predisposition towards action and like trying things and pivoting and just keeping momentum. I think those are like the important things. There's obviously many other characteristics. Yeah, I would say those are like the primary ones. Like if you're very driven, you'll find a way. Like I don't think there's any like specific follow this exact recipe and it will work. But there's definitely like clear principles. Yeah, there's lots online. You could watch Alex Mosey all day long and like he will give you lots of great principles. But at the end of the day, it's just like getting it done, like finding your own route.
So there's a question I like to ask everybody that I interview. I find it really interesting, you know, like their early roots. So what was your childhood like? Did you want to start your own business, be your own business owner from an early age?
Yeah, I think so. So I remember like reading or hearing about Richard Branson and I found that very inspirational. Like I can't remember if I was reading about him or how it was before I read about him because I've subsequently read his books, but I probably read those when I was in my late teens. And I'm actually thinking quite a bit earlier here. So I must have heard about him because I remember, so my surname's Whitman and I remember his brand is Virgin And I remember like creating like logos for different types of industries with like my name and so on. So I do remember that's like an early memory of like entrepreneurship or like conceding doing something in that space. My dad was his own business owner. And so I saw what that looked like from a child perspective, and then did some entrepreneurial things in my teens and ran a small business that actually made like decent money and saw the fruits of that and actually had people working for me. It was quite cool, like at 16 years old doing that type of thing. So yeah, I think I've always had the entrepreneurial spirit embedded in me. And I knew immediately because I worked for the first company I worked for was BP, petroleum company, oil and gas company. And like literally on day one, I just knew this was not for me. Like I just had like a deep revulsion towards working for someone in a big corporate. It just felt terrible. I just knew it wasn't for me. Yeah, I've never had that feeling in entrepreneurship. I had horrible feelings like this is, but not like I cannot do this for the rest of my life type feeling.
And I think, you know, 90% of the people I interview have that same answer. And it's so cool to see. It's just like a fire in you from early inside. And it's pretty cool.
With business books, I was interested in business. I watch, you probably watch My First Million. Sean from there talks a lot about, I'm the type of guy like him, I think. I analyze businesses when I'm just like walking past. I'm like, I wonder how this business made money. And so that's my brain's always doing that. Like, what's the business model? Like, how much do they make? I'm like calculating like back of the envelope stuff all the time. Like, I'm just always in that mode, like very, quite like my wife thinks it's very shallow and so on, but I like find it very interesting how the economy works. It just makes me, it's where my brain goes.
We had a contractor come over yesterday, and when I was done talking to him, I came in and I told my wife, I was like, this guy makes pretty good money. He does this like full time. And she looks at me and she goes, you just ask everybody this stuff all the time. Don't I just like, it's so freaking interesting.
It is interesting. And yeah, I love small business as well. I love like seeing local small businesses or scalable SaaS businesses or whatever. I just love looking at like different business models. I mean, I always used to be of the mind, like it needs to be a scalable SaaS. It needs to be global. But then I see like some great local businesses nowadays. Where I'm like, that is a beautiful business. It's got like no competition, prints cash.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? So coming into like last couple of questions, what advice do you have that you would give somebody who wants to start their own business? Maybe they feel stuck. They don't know where to start, but they kind of have that drive. Then they just don't have no first step is?
I mean, I would just say, like, I speak to a lot of people who I think of that sort of, they have the characteristics you just described. And I think it's like, they get stuck at idea and they get stuck about talking about this thing, but never take action. And then the ones that do take action, take the wrong sort of action, which is like creating, like doing stuff that's not going to get them closer to this business, like building a logo or something like that, or it should be a predisposition towards action. Like you've got the idea, just go do it. Like write down what needs to be done for this thing to come into life. And whatever needs to be done shouldn't take that long to bring it to life, that someone can actually express a commercial interest in this idea. Whether they pay you or not is, or that's a signal in itself. But like if you can get as close to getting the buy button on whatever it is, and so someone can actually transact with your idea, I think you already learn so much in that process. So yeah, like a predisposition just to take action, like start. And you know, sticking with it basically for a period of time where you can get sufficient feedback from the market that you've actually got something here. I don't know if that's helpful, but
I think it is. I mean, it, you know, you see, especially like if you read on Reddit or whatever, there's a lot of analysis paralysis out there.
Yeah, I mean, you can spend a lot of time on YouTube getting inspired. There's tons of information. You read tons of books. You can think about your idea. You can tell people about it. A lot of people don't even want to tell people about their idea. I'm like, that is just stupid. Like, you need to birth this thing. Like, bring it out. Like, take it to the market somehow, even in its most simplest form. I think a lot of people also get stuck on it. Well, it needs to be perfect. Can't take it to market. You can take the most basic version of this thing to market to get some feedback. So, like, removing hurdles and just doing what needs to be done to get your idea out of your head and into a marketplace where someone can engage with it, and not like your friends or family, but like a stranger to like really give you real feedback or maybe even transact. I like putting buy buttons on things before I even have the product or service. If you're really good at creating the proposition and like expressing what it is that you're trying to to sell, whether it's a product or service, you might as well just put a buy button on it with a price and see if anyone's willing to do that. You can give their money back immediately or just have them on a wait list or something like that. But it's like an expression of interest that someone's interested in this thing that you've created. So yeah, like just start basically. Get the wheel